It's because of sports that I was able to find my passion, which is sports television.
Welcome to It's Because of Sports, the podcast exploring the journeys of athletes, coaches, and professional women from competition to careers beyond the game, where sports meets life for athletes, fans, and anyone who's navigating what's next. And I'm your host, Steph Z, and today I'm here with Kaylin Wright. Kaylin played basketball at USC and has worked in television sports broadcast for over 35 years. Welcome to the show, Kaylin. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I was really excited to meet you in person a couple weeks ago. We were chit-chatting, and I just want to learn more about you, about your career, all things basketball. Please take me a little bit through your life in a nutshell.
Well, thanks, Steph, for having me on. I appreciate it. Well, I don't even know where to begin.
I know. I just laid that up for you not to hit in.
Right. Well, I mean, as a young kid, I always knew I was very athletic. So it was just a natural progression for me to get into sports. And the first thing I ever did was I ran track.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they had these all-comer meets when we were kids, and so parents would just take their kids, and it was like every Wednesday night, you got to run and track meet. They gave you ribbons, and that, you know, it was just a fun thing to do. And then I was around 10, mm-hmm. My brother got a basketball court for Christmas. You know, the kind you put on top of your house?
Oh, like on the ground. I had one of those. Like when you first had a basketball court, I was like, that's pretty good gift. But like the ones that you like lower, you had like the stick and you moved it up and down.
No, not even the stick. It's like it was on top of the roof.
Oh,
I'm going old school because I'm a bit older. Old school where you just mounted it on top of the roof above your garage.
At the exact 10 foot. Or did you do it?
Yes.
Okay. Awesome.
Wow. Exact 10 foot. And so he wasn't really too interested in it, but I was. So I just started going out there every day and shooting hoops. And then my next door neighbor had her boyfriend used to come over and then pass me the ball and give me tips. Just random. And so as I progressed along, I just got better and better and better and better. And then we moved about a year later into a neighborhood. Then we had the real court where it was on the pole, 10 feet. Everybody in the neighborhood had a court at their house. And so we all played.
Right.
And it just kind of progressed from there. And then by the time I was a senior in high school, I had given up all the other sports and I just concentrated on basketball.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I met USC.
Wow. Okay. So wait, let's take it back. What was it about basketball? Like your brother got this gift. He didn't really use it that much. Like what was it about basketball that drew you to it, that made you want to play more?
I just enjoyed doing, I came from a sports family. So sports was always on in the house. So either we were at some sporting event or we were watching it on TV. And my mother was a big sports fan, too. And just something about basketball, I don't really know what it is or what it was at the time. It was just that something that I really, really enjoyed doing. And then I just continued to keep getting better and better and better. And I just became I was a great shooter. Like I was a two guard.
Ooh.
So I could shoot the lights out. And it was just something that you got to practice. You know, some people are scorers, some people are shooters, whatever. I was a shooter.
Shoot the lights out. I like that. I've never heard that term, but I'm definitely going to potentially say it again. And if I'm ever like on some basketball team, you know, I'm going to call you and be like, hey, come on my team, which is interesting because for me in high school, I played basketball too in high school, definitely wasn't as good as you. And it was the sport that I excelled the least at. I played field hockey, basketball, and softball. And for me, basketball, I don't know what it was, if it was like the form, the concentration. Like, and I think it's one of those sports where you play offense and defense. It's really quick. You know what I mean? So for me, I loved it. And I still love to play. Like, you go to the bar, whatever, you have those like little like point hot shot things and like, but I'm just not great. Like I don't suck, but I'm just not great at it. So it's like really interesting to talk to people that are really good at basketball because it takes such precision in like a different way. I mean, literally it's like you're shooting a ball through a hoop that's like this big, you know?
Right.
So then you said you went to USC. Now, how did that happen? Because again, you know, that was, you know, the landscape of women's sports was different when you were in high school going into college. So was there a recruiting process to get you to USC? How did that happen?
So in high school, I started getting letters in my sophomore year. And I would get tons and tons of letters from all over the country. But by the time I was like a junior, I knew I didn't want to leave California. So then that limited the schools that I was going to go to. And ironically, I went to UCLA first. That was my first recruiting trip. And I thought I was going to go to UCLA. And then I went to Cal. I went to Long Beach State because they were really, really good back in the early 80s. And then SC was like, hey, we want you to come. And as soon as I got there, one of my recruiting trip, it was a done deal. Done deal.
Wow. Why? What happened? Was it just the coaches you met? Was it the people? Was it because it's different parts of LA, but it's still kind of LA.
Right. I had met the coaches. I want to say the prior summer I had gone to the USC summer camp, but it was the players. And then again, to get a chance to play with Cheryl Miller, and not only Cheryl Miller, Cynthia Cooper was there too.
It's top notch.
You can't pass it up. You want to go and play with the best.
Did you follow USC basketball when you were in high school? Like, did you, like you said, you grew up in a sports family. Like, did that include watching female sports and collegiate athletes?
Well, not so much female sports because it really wasn't on. The only time you got to see the NCAA championships, or they were AWI, what I'm not sure what it was before, was like the national championship game. So I remember started watching maybe in the 1980-ish. That was like my freshman year of high school. I can't remember the teams, but that's how it started. And then, you know, SC won in 82. And then in 83, I grew up in Fresno. I drove down and went to the national championship game when they beat Tennessee. Because by that point, I already knew I was going to go to SC. So that was kind of it. So women's basketball was not on TV back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, we've come a very long way from them, which is, you know, 80s to now, it's about 45 years, which in like, you know, it's really quick in some ways, but it took a really long time in other ways. You know what I mean? Like a lot has changed, I guess is a better way to say it. But like it took a really long time because now I feel like the change is happening, you know, quicker and quicker and quicker. You mentioned that, you know, you got to play. So you played in the same years with Cheryl Miller, correct? For some of them.
She was 2 years ahead of me.
Okay. So she was
for 2 years. Yes.
Okay. So what was it like to be able to play with someone? Or, I mean, I guess a better way to ask you that question is, what culture did a great player like Cheryl Miller create for the USC women's basketball team? Because I feel like that lives on still.
Right, right. It was not only a culture by her, it was a culture by the whole team. The whole team had a similar personality and we went hard at each other. Like there were no easy practices. And we didn't, you know, how sometimes certain players you won't go at it. No, everybody went hard at everybody. And so it was just a good appreciation of everybody's skill sets. And we just wanted to win. So to win, that means you had to go hard in practice because these other teams out there were good too. Because that was the years that Louisiana Tech was good, Texas was good. This was way before anybody had ever heard of UConn. They weren't even on the map.
Yeah.
It was like Georgia, Old Dominion, Long Beach State, and those and Tennessee. Those were the teams.
Yeah. And I get that. It's not just Cheryl Miller, it's the players around her. Also, what influence do you think Coach Linda Sharp had on this team?
She had a good influence because, I mean, think about it. She brought the players in. I mean, before Cheryl, she had gotten the McGee twins.
Yeah.
So that kind of started it. And then after that, Cooper came because she was a year ahead of Cheryl. And then once she got Cheryl in that class, incoming freshman, because Rhonda Wendell was in that class, then everything just, I mean, it had all the pieces.
Right.
Like, if you put that team up against any of the teams that they say are the best, they would win hands down.
Yeah. I feel like it's a lot of the key ingredients kind of came together to make this happen. And it's interesting because, you know, when I was doing some research and looking about you and about this team and, you know, USC's history, it's like, I feel like this really kind of was, and again, maybe it's, like, because this is the time where we started seeing it and we like started watching the championship games on TV. Like, I think that media has a role in the awareness and the amount of things we can look up and learn about. But I do think that this is kind of like one of the strongest eras of USC's women's basketball. And it really like continues through, You know, I feel like even today, when you think about it, like USC is always one of the top contenders. Like, how do you think that continues to happen? Do you think it's the recruiting? Do you think it's the culture? Like, what do you think those key ingredients are to keep that success going?
Yeah, I thought we lost our way a while back. And now it's so good to see where the USC program is, because we had some down years for a long time after, right after Lisa Leslie and Tina Thompson left. We had some lean years, and it's taken a while. And it sometimes you have to get that star player that crosses over everything. So like a player like Juju to bring it back.
Yeah.
Like those are like one in, you know, every so often you're going to get those. Cheryl Miller was that. Now we have Juju. Lisa Leslie was that. So it's just good to see that we were able to keep, the talent here in Los Angeles, as opposed to, you know, a lot of the players, best players from LA used to go other places. So, that kind of brought us back on the map, and now we're hoping to stay.
Yeah. What do you think the responsibility is of the star player?
It's a lot. It falls on their shoulders. So back when I was there with Cheryl, I mean, she was huge and you didn't have social media.
Right.
So just take that into where we are now. I feel bad a lot of times for these players, because they have so much to deal with, because there are so many more eyes and people have more access to them because of social media. So I think it's a tough landscape to navigate, just because of it's just so much, and it can become overwhelming.
I think so too. And I think that, and correct me if you disagree or have a different, you know, feeling on this, but I think too, especially with the way that the landscape of women's sports are now, like, I feel like there's a lot more responsibility, for these women to be these storytellers and to have stories about them, which is also amazing that there's a lot more eyeballs going and falling upon these women. And there's a lot more outlets to see them and learn these athlete stories and these things that are so, so important to learn to keep this growing and to inspire that next generation. But it also must be really tough that that's kind of like the weight of it all on these players, that then no matter what's going on in their life are expected to perform at the top level time after time after time.
No, I agree with you. And there's like no way to hide from anything, because somebody always has a camera.
Yeah.
So back in the 80s, you didn't have to worry about any of that. You were able to, you had freedom to like just go and be yourself and, you know, get away from everything at times when, you know, things could be overwhelming. Now it's kind of hard, because everywhere you go, somebody has a camera, and because of the exposure, everybody knows you. So it's a tough thing. I mean, it's great for the exposure, but sometimes people don't know how to give you your space.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you. I think that that's a really tricky thing to navigate. Because I would imagine, you know, before social media, you were allowed those moments to go be pissed off by yourself and not have it caught on camera.
Right. I mean, back in the day, we used to fill arenas. So because of Cheryl Cooper and all, even though we may not have been on TV, but we were on a little bit more than others because of our team. The arenas, can you imagine having 15,000 people against you? And that was a thing. I remember we went to Georgia my freshman year, and they had these, you know, like the church fans, the little paper on a stick. They had Cheryl's face on it with the line going through it. And everybody in the arena had one of these. So can you imagine?
No. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. And I don't think that would happen today. I think that people think that it would. I think it was inappropriate then to single out a player and do something like that. And I think now people wouldn't go, like, the chain of commands wouldn't allow such a thing to happen.
Right.
But yeah, like there'll be signs and there'll be stuff, but to give every, like now they give like a towel or like something that unite the people rather than to like X out the star player coming. But that just takes another level of mental, you know, fitness in a way. Did you guys, when you were on the team in USC, did you guys focus on any of that, like mental fitness? I feel like that's a newer concept that these athletes have to go through. But when you were there, like, was mental fitness a thing for USC back in the 80s?
No. I mean, it's a newer thing, but you know, people didn't talk about stuff like that. You're just tough, and you sucked it up, and you went out and, can I say that? I don't know if I can use that word.
You just went out and
did what you had to do. But I just think that helped us when we went into our next occupation.
Right.
So that mental toughness has helped us. It translated us when we got into our professional careers.
Right. And with that, yeah, I think that I agree with you. I think there are so many transferable skills that being an athlete helps set you up for success. Now, from playing college basketball, you went and worked for ESPN. Like, tell us how that happened. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So my senior year, we were on TV. And for whatever reason, I got to go into the TV truck. And light bulbs just went off. And I was like, hey, what is this? Because I didn't know what I was going to do. I'm a senior in college and, you know, I had a major of communication, but it wasn't in broadcast communication. It was just like, okay, you got to get your degree and then you'll figure it out. And as soon as I saw this TV truck inside, the light bulbs went off. And so one of the trainers at SC knew a producer who worked at Prime Ticket at the time. His name was Dennis Kirkpatrick. And she got hooked me up and I got a job with him just doing like odd things. I used to work on this show called the USC Sports Report. It was a UCLA Sports Report. And we would just go up to the colleges, interview people. And so I would carry around stuff, take notes when we were, you know, taping. And then I started working at some basketball games where I'd be the red hat. I would sit there and tell the referee when they could start playing during TV times, after TV times.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Yeah. So I kind of did that. And then at some point they kind of moved away and I was making $50 a day and I thought I was rich.
Right.
Thought I was rich. Yeah. Back then. And then I, they started using interns. So I ended up start teaching in Compton just because I needed a job and they were hiring stuff. So I came out here and then while I was doing that, I got a job at KCOP. Which is Channel 13, but I don't think it's a station anymore that does anything. And yeah, I started working in the sports department on the weekend. So happened, a lot of the guys that worked there came from KTLA. And when Keith Olbermann went to ESPN, his friend who I worked with ended up going, and then that's how I ended up at ESPN.
That's amazing.
It's all about who you know. And I was only there for a short period of time, a year and a half. But that translated me into meeting people. And then a lot of people I worked with at ESPN left and went to Turner Sports. And then that's how I ended up at Turner Sports.
It's so amazing, though. It just shows. I mean, like, we met at an event that we did with Section Z, the nonprofit that I run. But, like, it's pretty much exactly the same. Like, we are trying to show that there are many, many jobs, you know, in the world of sports for young female athletes. Because, you know, like, the reality is the percentage that are going to go pro is small, right? But, like, there's this passionate world. And just like you being exposed and seeing that TV truck was like, whoa, light bulbs, like, I can do this. So when you say light bulbs when you went off, when you went in the TV truck, what does that mean to you?
So it was just like, hey, what is this? You know, I was like, wait, how this whole TV thing, how does it work? And it, to me, I was like, wait, I can work in TV, but I can still be around sports. So hello, it just made sense. And then, you know, and now it's like 35 years later. And I have traveled the world covering sports. So things I would have been at home watching anyway, I was able to go out and work these events. So it's not like work. It wasn't work to me. It wasn't work.
Yeah.
It was great. I've traveled the world covering sports.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, I think what they say, that like true definition or that quote that like flies around, like if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life. And that seems like, again, a message that we want to, you know, put out so much, is that like there are more and more opportunities like that for young women in the sports world. So then tell us a little about, like, to the average person, you know, or for lack of a better word, to like someone that doesn't know, what is a coordinating director, right? That's what you did. Like, what does a coordinating director at ESPN do?
So I wasn't a coordinating director at ESPN. So it differs depending on where you're working as what the role is. like I said, I started at the bottom. I was a PA, and then I kind of worked my way up, and I ended up, I used to direct. So I direct a lot of NBA games and college basketball. I travel with the Charlotte Bobcats, which are now the Hornets. I traveled with them 4 years, and I directed all of their basketball games, all their pre and post shows, halftime, everything. And at Turner Sports, I did kind of the same. I also AD. So it was like a lot of different roles working in different sports. And then my last role was actually at Peloton, where I was a coordinating director. And that's kind of like, you're kind of in charge of everything that falls under, your umbrellas, like you, the directors will fall under your directors. You're in charge of how the studio shows look, what the sets look like, which cameras you're going to use. And then you help train folks and that sort of thing.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. And how is, you know, because when you say directing, like, I think a lot of people like default to like a movie and they're directing actors and what they're telling them what to do, right? And like, obviously, you're not telling the actors what they're doing. So how is directing a sports program different than directing a movie?
So sports program, you're actually directing cameramen. So basically, depending on which sports you're doing. So I'll just take basketball, for example. Each camera person has a specific assignment, and then they're able to ad lib at times. So while the game is going on, you're telling them every time what you want them to do, so you know which camera you're going to call. Say, just an example, if it's a foul, one camera would always get the person who fouled, and then two other cameras would get the person who was fouled. And so you kind of knew, and then you direct them, hey, I want this shot, I want this shot. And then when you bring in the graphics and all of that, so you're more, because it's a live event, you don't know what anybody's doing. You got to really, really know the sport and know, kind of anticipate where players are going to be and when they fall, when they get up, which camera they're going to turn to and stuff like that.
It's really, really interesting. So that's kind of a little bit of like the behind the scenes, how that happens. Like one person's job. And like, again, if I'm reiterating this wrong, tell me, but I just want to make sure that I understand. So one person will be like, okay, your job is to get all the fouls. So they're just continuing to look for the fouls. And then the other person will be like, okay, if someone gets fouled, like, so each camera person has like a specific thing to keep in mind as the game goes on.
Well, yes. And then they have other duties too. So that was just one specific thing. Because you usually, even on a, you usually have anywhere between, if it's a really small thing, it could be four cameras and you can have up to like 15.
So,
so the most I think I ever did, I think I maybe had 9 cameras on a game. And so even though they have certain specific things they're supposed to do, then they're still doing other things too. That's just not all they're doing. Even though they just know every time there's a foul, you're going to get the person who fouled. But during the game, they have other things that they're doing.
Yeah. So do you think that most camera people are former athletes? Like, or are they just, could they, I mean, like, I guess they don't have to be, but like being a former athlete or knowing the game or knowing the movement that's going to happen, is that something you think anyone could learn? Or do you think that's something that's like ingrained in them, having that reflex to look at where the next thing is?
It's something that it's good if they do know the sports, but a lot of camera people don't. So that's why you have to really be able to direct them as to what you want them to do. And that's all they do. So they do know. But there are times where you get people who have completely no idea about that sport.
Oh, wow. So that's awesome, too, because that's another way to tie back to that being like a great job for an athlete that potentially doesn't know what they want to do, still wants to be involved, feels like they're still in the game. You know what I mean? How did being an athlete help you succeed in this role?
Well, you know, when you're an athlete, you've learned how to communicate, especially if you're on a team. You have to learn how to communicate. You have to learn how to deal with adversity because, you know, within a game, there's going to be adversity. You have a mentality, you're never going to give up on anything, and you're very coachable. So whatever you get into, you have to be coachable. And because you're an athlete, you kind of learn that. So when you go and try to do something else, you're not going to have all the answers. So you have to be willing to practice, to get better, and to listen. A lot of times, the best way to get better at something is to actually listen and just observe.
I agree with you 100%. I feel like there's a lot of people, you know, I feel like we have this stigma around having to know everything. But like actually listening and being able to ask questions and, you know, observe what's happening. And for me, like, I know, like, the way that I learn the best is by watching something. And that's probably the athlete in me. You know what I mean? It's like, if I see the way it happens and just like really focus. What's that? Yes.
I totally agree with you. I learn a lot by just watching. People are like, why are you so quiet? I'm like, I'm just paying attention to everything. I'm learning.
Yeah. And I think that's also, which is really interesting, like a complete side note in a way, but it's like, I feel like that's, you know, like nowadays a lot of kids learn from like these YouTube videos or stuff like that. And it's funny because like I go and I can learn from a video because you see someone doing it. You know what I mean? And it goes back to, I have a question for you. When you started in your career, was there a lot of women there or were you kind of like one of the first?
I was, there were hardly any women and there definitely weren't any black women. Even when I was directing, I think I may have been the only, at the time, black female to have a regular gig directing NBA basketball. And when you walk into the truck, most of the time, you're always questioned as far if you know what you're really doing. And then after, you know, the game, they're like, oh, you were great. But why would you expect anything other? But I mean, it's just the way the world is. I mean, it is what it is. It's a man's world. We know that.
Like I said, it takes, you know, women like yourself to go in there and to not be scared and to show up and do it. But I think, and again, not only in your career, but I think that's a stigma with sports in general. Like there are times where I'll go watch some sort of game by myself at the bar, because like I kind of like to go there. I kind of like to listen and watch the game. And I'll ask someone a question because I missed something or I went to the bathroom and like, you know, the majority of the other people there are men. And they'll look at me like, oh, okay, she wants to know this. And like, they like, you know, give me the answer. And then I'll start saying stats or this, the other thing. And they're like, oh.
Yeah, so yes.
I feel like the messaging around women, and it's crazy too, because like they don't even know that you played. They don't even know that you probably have way more knowledge than them. They don't even know that you could probably one-on-one kill them in a game. You know what I mean? But it's like as fanship as a whole, I think we need to kind of shift that narrative a little bit. You know, like I really wish we could
because like you said, they just assume. So men now have learned not to argue with me about anything sports. I am a sports almanac. I don't know why I keep a whole bunch of useless information in my head, but I have friends now, men friends, where they're like, don't argue with her. Or if they need to know an answer to a trivia question, they'll come and ask me.
I was literally going to say, me and you should go hit up some sports trivia. Yeah,
we should, because it's just, I have so much useless information and the fact that I'm a lot older than what I look. People don't realize I can go back to the 70s and they're like, wait, how do you know that? Because I was a kid during that time.
Yeah, because so I was there.
Yeah.
What do you think one of the most trivia or like useless tidbits of information that's interesting that you have about sports is? Are there any that come to mind?
Nothing that comes to mind, but I have a whole bunch of useless information up in my head. But nothing that's like really sticking out at this moment. But I assure you, I have a whole bunch of useless information.
Well, it's funny because we recently did a study on the impacts of sports in women aged 9 to 75 for Section Z. And one of the things that I came out with, oh, and it's so funny, I didn't even plan this, but I actually have this study right here. But it was really interesting because one of the things that came out, and I want to make sure that I say it correctly, was if you like, this is a fact, and it's insane that up until 1992, so not that long ago in reality, up until 1992, there were more dogs and horses on TV than women's sports. How insane is that?
All you can do is laugh.
Right.
That's
because it's so entertaining. And I feel like, and again, obviously I'm a advocate for women's sports, you know, but like, the reality is I feel like it's in a lot of ways more exciting to watch women's sports. I feel like there's less flopping in women's sports. I feel like there's more sportsmanship in women's sports. Like, I feel like all the principles of sports exist way more in women's sports, and you can see that. You know, something that comes up a lot when people talk about, you know, women's basketball versus men's basketball, right? There's a lot of comparisons. There's a lot of stuff. A lot of people, and I think, I don't want to say the wrong person, but somebody with some big NBA player recently said that the women should just lower the hoop, so that the women can dunk and that would make it more exciting and that would grow the WNBA. I personally think that that's a dumb idea. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a terrible idea. Why do we have to lower the rim? It was bad enough. After my senior year of high school, they changed and went to the little ball and I hated it. So I was like, really? Why do we need to play with two different basketball? Yeah. That's when they changed the ball. Yeah. So the ball was smaller. So we used to play with the regulation ball that everybody used. And then my freshman year of college was the first year they went to women using the smaller ball. And I was like, yeah, and that's, I feel the same way about that then as I feel about why would you lower the rim? That has nothing to do with the game of basketball.
I don't think it does either. And it's interesting too, because I feel like the way that the game has evolved lately, and again, I'm no expert. So like, happy to correct me if you think that there's a different opinion that makes more sense. But I feel like the game also has changed so much to a 3-point game rather than a dunk game. You know what I mean? Which sometimes is frustrating to watch because you'll see them miss like 5 3-pointers in a row and they could have got like at least, you know, 4 or 2 points and they'd be not losing by as much when they're trying to come back, which is just kind of like a really random funny thing. But I don't feel like that would make the game that much more exciting. You know, and recently, and I feel like just there's a lack of knowledge when people debate on some of these things. Like recently, go ahead. What's that?
I would rather have people who are more skilled who could shoot than to see a dunk. I want to see the mid-range game come back. Like everybody wants to shoot 3-pointers or they're driving to the hole. What about the mid-range game?
That nice little elbow shot.
Right. Like in the NBA, DeMar DeRozan is great. He knows his spots. He's great at the mid-range, but nobody plays like that anymore. And like you said, everybody either wants to dunk or shoot 3-pointers. How about we become more skilled?
I agree with you.
Actually be able to shoot.
Yeah. And listen, I think that I don't know if it comes from the game plan, but I think that a lot of these people, like I've been to in the past week, I've been to 4 WNBA games, watching Asia Wilson, man, she can hit it from anywhere. And she does have some of that game that I think you're talking about.
She's a skilled player.
And it's fun. It's just as fun to watch because I think the thing that's most exciting about that is that you don't know when they're going to pull up and just shoot.
Right. And then when she gets on the block, you know, another lost art is a drop step. She can drop step on you. She can turn around and shoot the jumper. She can go either way with either hand. I know she's left-handed, but she can go right also. And like I said, I just enjoy watching people who are very skilled play the game.
Yeah. And so that brings me to this. I'd love to kind of hear some of your thoughts about, like, we have this ongoing debate in the WNBA, right? So the players recently, and I was actually there and it was a moment. Like, it was so great. I was lucky enough to be in Indianapolis at the All-Star Game, which by far one of the best women's sports events I've ever been into my entire life. And I've been to a lot of sports events. The way the community felt, the way, like, it was just, the players, like, it was like everything about it felt inclusive and like exciting to be a part of. So Indy, again, you did it really well, but the players came out with the shirts, pay us what you owe us now. And again, I think that a lot of people don't understand, like you see on the social media as well, the guys are making more money because they have more this, that, or the other thing and more viewership and this. And that's not really what the players are asking for. So could you take us through what the players of the WNBA are actually asking for and what is behind the pay us what you owe us t-shirts that they're wearing?
I think in my opinion, because I'm not privy to all of what's going on, is they just want to be paid their worth. And players making $70,000, is that's not acceptable. I mean, and that's a jump from when they were just guaranteed $40,000 because they bring something to the table too. The WNBA is making money. Otherwise, they wouldn't be trying to get all these other teams. And now the fans are going. They have TV deals. So just pay them what they're worth. They're not asking for NBA money because it's apples and oranges. You can't compare the two. But they are definitely worth more than what they're being paid. And now that Unrivaled is on the scene, the WNBA has a problem. They have a huge problem. They're going to have to pay these players because for Nafisa and why can't I think of her name? Stewie. Come up with this concept, and they're paying the people, they're making a minimum of $200,000, and now they got all this backing. It was great. I didn't even think I would watch it. I sat there and watched as much, all of it. When I knew it was on, I was watching. It was great. And then that whole one-on-one contest they had, it was all great. They're doing a beautiful job. And now they can afford to sit out until they get what they want.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, from the research and what I learned about it, it's a lot of people have that, like, the NBA brings in a lot more money and this and the other thing. But so they're not saying that we want to make as much as the NBA right. players. They're saying they want more percentage of their own revenue. Right. So whatever right. they're doing, whatever they're generating, they should get more of a percentage. They're asking for an increase in the percentage that they get off their own revenue, which has nothing to do with the NBA. And those players are all getting a way higher percentage of theirs. And I do think that it is a very fair fight. And, you know, you bringing up Unrivaled, like, that is, it's amazing what they've created. I mean, it went, I think, from like $35 million valuation to $350 million valuation. And it's, yes. it's interesting because it's built by the players for the right. players. And if some right. of you out there aren't, you know, not aware of what's happening, they've literally, like, got, you know, six teams, and I think they added two, so now I think there's going to be, like, eight teams, and the players get paid, like you said, I think a minimum of $200,000, and they get ownership, so they get some sort of equity in the deal, which is amazing. It's such a good plan, like, it's such a good business plan, because people care, and it's also going to help having these women have to go overseas to play in the off season.
Right, right,
so
right.
yeah, they've definitely created a problem, but it's so smart. Like if the majority of the deals and the majority of the money is coming from these broadcast deals, figure out how to make something exciting to watch on TV. And it's so funny because soccer has one with TST, right. you know, the 7-on-7 tournament. Unrivaled has it now. And it very recently, a couple days ago, or by the time this airs, maybe a week or two ago, Tom Brady announced that they're doing a flag football one. So all right. these other people now are like, this is a really good idea. And I do think a lot of the major leagues, you know, like the NBA, the WNBA, I mean, the MLB has banana ball. Like there's all these right. different right. things that are being built for entertainment purposes that I think are gonna pay the players better, so everyone's gonna have to kind of step up and figure it out, which right. makes me excited.
Which they should, because you know, the players in the WNBA, these are skilled players. Like these are the top of the top, and people don't realize that. And for them to have to play year round just to make a decent living, is they don't get any time to rest and for their bodies to recover. So at this point, the WNBA is gonna have to step it up.
You know what? And I'm glad. I'm glad they have to, because I feel like, again, it's like, it's just, it's unheard of. It's, you know, terrible. Like whatever the right word is, that this is actually what happens. I mean, Paige Becker's like starting rookie career was like $80,000, $75,000. You know what I mean? Like for the amount of exposure and the amount of TV time that they have, the amount of viewership, it is very, yeah. very, disproportioned what these ladies get paid and what they're owed. So I again, it's always like you kind of hold your breath a little bit, like what's going to happen as a fan. You don't want them to strike in a lockout or anything like that. But in the same sense, you never want them.
Yeah.
What's that?
You don't advocate. You never advocate for that. You never.
No.
But at the same time, they have to stand their ground and get what is fair. What is fair, period.
Yes. 100%. I agree with you. You know, and it's interesting, and it kind of all goes back in a way to like a lot of these beginnings in the 80s with these teams like USC that you were a part of. You know what I mean? Like this, I feel like it like has been the bricks building, you know, like a lot of people say that the WNBA is having a moment and that, you know, the moment is a movement. But I do think that things like this don't happen unless a foundation has been being built years and years. You know, like I feel like, you know, like what part do you think USC played in beginning this foundation?
I mean, they played a huge part. I mean, you had the most charismatic player of all time playing, and that was Cheryl Miller. And in my opinion, she's the best ever, but a lot of people didn't get a chance to see her play because she got injured right out of college, and then, you know, TV wasn't around. But hands down, the best. And then I would say Cynthia Cooper is in the top five of that And she showed her work the first 4 years of the WNBA. So that foundation that was built by them, and then, like I said, the other players that were at Louisiana Tech, because they had a heck of a team back then in the day, Georgia, Old Dominion, all of these schools built the foundation for women to continue to move forward and get better. And now we're just having the culmination of all of it. It's kind of like when the NBA, people don't realize it was unpopular at one time. Like there were games were on tape delay. And it was Magic and Larry Bird that brought the NBA back. People don't realize that. Before that, their games were tape delayed when they were aired.
Wow. Yeah. And I didn't know that.
Yeah. So this is kind of what's happened with the WNBA. You can say whatever you want to have feelings about Caitlin Clark and, why did I just forget her name? Chicago Paige Sky. Beckers. No, Chicago.
Oh, Angel Reese.
They are good for the WNBA. And whatever fans they bring into the stands, they are here to stay, and it's all good. And so I hope they keep building on what they have and just keep getting bigger and better.
Yeah. I mean, and listen, I feel like a good analogy is almost like building a house, right? Like it doesn't go up overnight. It takes a long time to build. And some people have to be that solid foundation. Then the walls go up. Then this goes up. Then that goes on. But like some of these athletes now, it's like, oh, they're like the finishing paint on the house. And everyone's like, holy shit, these are the best, you know. And again, not to take like Caitlin Clark effect, like is real. And it is a lot of different timing. And it's amazing. And she's amazing for the sport. Same
timing
with Angel Reese.
Is everything.
Yeah, but I think that they're is a lot of that house that was built. It was just kind of like needing some finishing touches.
It took longer than some people expected, but now it's here. So whatever, you know, sometimes you just get the right mix of things and things come they mix together and make something great. And that's kind of what's happened over the last few years. Not saying that the league wasn't good before. Now they're on a upward, they're moving up. So they can only go up and better. Basically.
Yeah, 100%. And again, as a woman, as a sports fan, like that's exciting that it's moving in the upward trajectory that it is. And like, we all hope like all boats rise, right? Like so we just all hope that it continues to go. And I think it will. And like these little battles to getting paid what they want with Unrivaled, like the more and more things that come out and make this more accessible. And I think one thing too, that's really interesting is you're starting to see more and more storytelling around female athletes. I wish that there was more. I still think that there's a lot of room in growth for that. Like you see like the two or three key players, but you don't know a backstory about, like, I think that's something that the NBA and men's sports has a little bit more dialed at this moment in time, is that we know about the human rather than just the athlete. What do you think we could do, or what do you think as that continues will change for women's sports?
Well, a lot has to do with the teams marketing their players a little better, like finding those stories and getting them out there so the TV crews can start picking it up. And then during the game, you can hear more of those stories. And that's kind of like how it happens. So it really, somebody has to let people know, because sometimes you just don't know about it. But if I think the teams promote it a little more, and then, you know, now that everybody has their own social media, they can also start promoting themselves a little more. And then from there, that's when you get when the TV crews come in to do your games, they have these little tidbits that they can start putting into the telecast.
And that's so, so important. And that's kind of exciting to see how that will continue to change. And we will know more and more about these female athletes. And hopefully we'll learn more and more about these female athletes in a positive way. Like, I feel like a lot of media, and I feel like a lot of storytelling around females is more, for lack of a better word, superficial or kind of bullshit story. It's not anything of meaning and it's not anything inspirational. Like, and you know, it's been funny. Sometimes they'll have these red carpet interviews. I don't know if you've seen these, but they'll be like asking the guys, like, what are you wearing? And they'll be like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like the way that we ask and position female storytelling around male storytelling, especially as athletes, I think is very different how we pit people against each other. So hopefully that will change as well, because I think it's really important for the female storytelling to be more genuine and more with a positive light.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also agree when there's like little skirmishes in the game, why are we blowing it up? The men do the same thing. You're out there battling. It's a competition. So there's going to be little skirmishes, but it's not that big of a deal. And they make a big deal out of everything because, oh, the girls they're fighting. No. They're just competing just like the men do.
Which is unfortunate because and I think we are chipping away at that stigma. And I think it's going to take, you know, a little more time, more resources, more investment in women's sports. But I think we are chipping away at that stigma and starting to tell stories beyond that. But yeah, it's like they still, like what you said is exactly correct. It's like if Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, you know, have at it on the court, they're like, you know, someone slapped Travis Kelce in the face the other week. And it's like, you hear about it. Maybe there's a fine, maybe there's not. And it's over. You know what I mean? And it's like, this is a saga is going on for weeks and weeks. And you're like, man, they're just playing just as hard and they're being physical and they're being tough. And people don't expect that sometimes out of women, which is really, really unfortunate because they can compete and they can, you know, be just as passionate about their sport, but it's just seen in a different way.
Right. Yeah, so I really wish they would get away from that. Like, sometimes you're going to run into a hard screen.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And, you know, but they make, and then you just see it over and over on social media. And it's just like, okay, enough already. Stop.
Yeah.
And then you have all these people commenting on it. And you're like, you don't even know what you're talking about. Please go away.
Yeah, that's the worst. I mean, that is such a pet peeve for me, too. Like, like I said, I'm not trying to say that I know all things about all sports, but I feel like I have a fair amount of knowledge about sports. And sometimes I get some of my friends even will like send me some like clip about sports, be like, can you believe this? And I'll be like, this is like a clickbait headline. It has no business being in here. That's not what happened at the game that you didn't even see or watch. Right. I bet my life on it. You didn't see or watch it, but you send me like, I can't believe this. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. We're moving in the right direction. It's taken some time, but we are going in the right direction finally, which is good about women's sports.
I 100% agree with you. And I'm excited for it. I'm excited to be a part of it. I'm excited to watch it happen. I mean, I think there will be a little bit of like hurdles or like, you know, bends in the road a little bit, but I do think that we are definitely heading down the right path. So is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up? Like, I loved learning more about you and hearing your opinions on anything. Is there anything else that like sticks out of like, oh, let's talk about this?
No, not really that I can think of. Like, I normally don't do stuff like this.
Yeah,
that's why I was always behind the camera. Me talking in front of people is like, oh, so this is big for me to do this.
Oh, well, I really, really appreciate you taking the time. And hopefully you felt comfortable chatting with me. It was super fun to chat with you and get to know you a little bit better and your journey. But yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much, Kaylin.
I appreciate you having me on. I really do appreciate it. This has been great. Like you said, it's been a great conversation. It's been great getting to know you and just meeting you a few weeks ago. So this is good. And hopefully our paths will cross soon again.
All right. Sounds good to me. I'm in. I'm down for our paths crossing. You just tell me when and where and I'll be there and we'll go shoot some hoops and you'll beat me. I'm a good sport. I'm a team player. I'm not a sore loser, so I'll have a good time.
We can only do coffee shot. I don't play anymore.
Okay, I'm fair. We'll play horse or 21 or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So that sounds good.
All right, awesome. Well, I look forward to it. We'll eventually post some pictures of you and I playing some basketball. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us today.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
I want to thank Kaylin again and thank you all for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, and follow, you know, all the things you do wherever you find your podcasts.